right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We made it. It's been a long week for me already. It is 76 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like it's going to rain, I'm thinking. Rained on and off here most of the day yesterday and got pretty cool and humid, which was unusual. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Kurzweil, Krasinski, Transhumanism, The Machine, and Drones. Yes, if anyone saw the title before that, I didn't have drones in there. But after I listened to the show to do the notes, I thought, you know what? There was a whole section on drones. And it was pretty interesting. We listened to a clip by Kurzweil talking about his immortality, living forever and implanting himself either inside of some sort of robotic body or merging with the machine. But then we had stumbled across an article by Bill Joy, who is the, and I don't know if he still is the CEO of Sun Microsystems, but he very well may be. But back in the 90s, I'm telling you, Sun Microsystems, where I worked, we had a Sun Microsystems division. You had to have special clearance to even work in that department. And anyone who resold their products had to be specially authorized to sell their products. They were very, very high-end Linux-based clustering type servers, large arrays of hard drives and clusters of processors. And so, I mean, we're talking mid-90s. This was pretty high-end stuff for mid-90s. So typically the only places that were allowed to buy this stuff was the federal government, maybe hospitals, NASA, military. That's the type of places that they would do business with for this. So, you know, Bill Joy, I am certain, was in the know back in the late 90s just with, you know, the organizations that he did business with. But anyway, the title of the story was The Future Doesn't Need Us Anymore, out of 2000 when he wrote this story for Wired magazine. And it's pretty much his journey as to how he came to this conclusion. And what was so interesting is at the very beginning of his story, he says that when it all started, it started with his meeting of Kurzweil at the event that they were both speaking at. So let me just see here. Let me see if I can add myself. Sorry, guys. I don't know. All these machines out here were freshly rebooted. And they are all working like syrup now. And I'm not going to get frustrated over it because I don't need any more stress. So we're just going to roll with the punches today. If something doesn't work, I'll try and laugh at it. All right, let's see if we can connect. There we go. All right. It's the future calling, and they said they don't need us anymore. Good old Billy Gates had even said by the year 2015, or no, it is 2015, 2020, robots will be taking 50% of all the jobs.
Before the rising role that automation and robots play in some parts of the workforce, tonight we have a more sobering and perhaps somewhat eerier picture of how those trends are gathering force more quickly than anticipated. Economist correspondent Paul Solomon looks at the promise and the perils of the rise of the robot, part of our weekly series, Making Sense, which airs every Thursday on the NewsHour.
And here's the thing, you know, she said the key words, how this is happening more quickly than we anticipated. And aren't we hearing that everywhere? Didn't we hear that now just in the story about yesterday, the killer robots, where they said, well, you know, we thought this was going to be 50 years in the future. And now, oh, well, no, it's coming faster than we expected. If you guys remember when we first started listening to Kurzweil and he was talking about the exponential capability, and actually there was a clip at the end of the show that ran on air yesterday that said that exact same thing. It creates exponential creation of itself. So as we use our brains to create the technology, but then for the next generation, we use the technology to improve that technology, and then that technology to improve. And eventually that technology gets smart enough to start making its own improvements, right? And that's where we get into trouble. But this exponential improvement that's happening is making, Kurzweil said in the very beginning, he had plotted out that it was going to be, I don't even remember how many years he had said, for his transhumanist agenda. But as the years went by, time's been getting shorter in regards to how long it's going to be before man merges with the machine because of this exponentiality. So look out, people, because everybody thought this was, you know, going to be in their great-grandchildren's future. And the unfortunate fact of the matter is that it's coming before we know it and whether or not we know it.
The 11th hole at Stanford University.
Chad Vipers. Is
okay, golfer, but his caddy is really hard to beat.
It's going to go wherever you want it to go. Follows you like a puppy dog.
Meet the robot caddy trek.
Yeah, it's two ultrasound bars that send a signal back to the remote that's on my back pocket here.
It's an incredibly simple piece of technology.
But the implications for America's caddies and millions of other workers are ominous, says computer scientist and serial entrepreneur Jerry Kaplan. Kaplan has his own labor-saving schlepper, an R2-D2 designed to make local deliveries.
This is the Stanford Jackrabot.
Jackrabot.
Yes.
As in robot.
That's right. It's like a jackrabbit, but it's a robot. It's designed to operate in socially appropriate ways in pedestrian spaces.
Jack looks harmless enough, but he, like Caddy Trek, is the shape of things to come.
Damn good thing they're creating robots to interact in socially appropriate ways.
We're about to see a significant increase in acceleration in the rate of automation.
And the age-old fear of displaced workers, says Kaplan, is finally, irrevocably upon us.
What happens to people who simply can't acquire or don't have the skills that are going to be needed in the new economy?
Well, what is going to happen to them?
We're going to see much worse income inequality, and unless we take some humanitarian actions, the truth is they're going to starve and live in poverty and then die.
Did he just say that? That was a professor from Stanford. I think that's who was talking. Did he just say that? I mean, that's what we always suspected. And it's coming, people. I mean, we're talking 5 years. They're already saying 50% of all workers will be displaced. They have these little R2-D2 bots that carry and move everything. They were showing gardening, zipping around. The first one was a golf club caddy. They carry your things around. I saw a hospital robot to care for the elderly that will keep them company and flip them over so they don't get bed sores. And, I mean, it's not just physical robots, too. Don't forget software, software as a service, all of these different functions, features, things that we can database dip and then pull data back, where that used to take people working on all that stuff and putting together reports. You know, we read a story a while back looking at attorneys, all the different jobs of the future that would be gone. Attorneys would be one. All the law software could very easily punch in for the majority of cases, especially like the basic cases. I'm sure that they could do a wizard for that, right? Trying to think of some of the other ones. I don't know. It's before the first cup. I just literally woke up. All right, here. We'll listen to a little more while I sip on my coffee.
Kaplan offers that grim prognosis in a new book, Humans Need Not Apply. He knows, of course, that automation has been replacing labor for 200 years or more, for decades eliminating relatively high-paying factory jobs in America, and that new jobs have more than kept pace. But not anymore, he says.
You're the guy from the same-day delivery piece, right?
Now, by pure chance, a case in point happened to notice Jack Rabot being put through his paces. We'd met Mike Cannon a few months earlier, when shooting him delivering packages for Google Express.
So I'm delivering the...
So Google Express, too. Don't forget, the Amazon drones are just about ready to hit the road as well. 30-minute delivery, mind you. I was watching a commercial for it yesterday. 30-minute delivery.
DNA samples to all the various labs on campus.
And you were just watching us shoot.
And it caught my attention. I thought, that's my replacement.
Hi, I'm Moshbot.
at a hardware store in Silicon Valley, Oshbot. Doorknobs.
Sure. Follow me.
Are you serious?
Yep.
A joint venture between the Lowe's chain of stores and a startup called Fellow Robots. Oh, without ever needing a coffee or bathroom break, its voice recognition software, fluent in multiple languages, and laser sensor safety technology can do a better job than many of America's 5 million or so retail workers.
And never call in sick. Works holidays and late nights. How frightening is this? And, you know, as we're watching this TPP, the last ends of the negotiations, I saw they just left their 12 days of negotiation without a decision yet. But don't think that that TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, isn't eventually going to go through. They're going to do whatever it takes to stuff that genie sideways into their new bottle for whatever their nefarious plan is, to suck the very last of the middle class out of this country to Malaysia or Indonesia or some other 10-cent-an-hour country for cheap labor so they could peddle their goods to the last of the Americans who have a job who can go to Walmart and spend it. You know, I mean, it's coming, people.
Maybe 50% of the retail clerks could be replaced by this kind of technology. And of course, this is just the beginning.
50% of retail clerks could be replaced by this kind of technology, he said.
Now, Oshbot's inventor, Marco Mascoro, disputes that his baby would put anyone out of work. So you don't see Oshbot replacing people?
No, I don't think so. I think this is really a tool that helps people find things in store with very specific information.
And if you think, well, Oshbot still seems a bit clunky as a replacement for humans,
after you, Kima.
Thank you.
In downtown Palo Alto, Suitable Technologies Beam Telepresence Robot sells itself with no humans on site at all.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Beam is a smart presence system, so it allows us to beam in anywhere in the world. We have a Wi-Fi connection and maneuver this device just on our keyboards here.
Turn around, would you? Do a 360 for me.
The problem in retail is staffing. You have people standing around in stores often just waiting for people to come in.
Right.
And then you've got customers at other times that are waiting and can't get help.
And already, says Taylor Suet, beaming in from upstate New York.
We've had a couple banks actually start to use them where if all of a sudden a secondary location gets swamped, you could have a couple of tellers from the first location actually beam into that second location, and now you've instantly doubled the staff without actually doubling the staff and hiring twice as many people.
Kima.
Oh, my God, they're calling it beaming in. We've seen these robots before in regards to e-healthcare, which is going to be the future of Obamacare, I am postulating. But it has a little pedestal with two little wheels, and then it's got two tall poles sticking up from the pedestal. And on top, it looks like it's probably just a maybe a 14-inch little LCD panel that's close up and personal with the person's face, and they can move around. They can remote control it from their location on the wheels and take it all over. So when I first saw these, it was actually a doctor that was going from room to room doing like follow-ups on patients on one of these, and he was probably sitting somewhere in a different city or state, you know, doing the rounds. So now they're going to do this for retail as well and banking. Like, I just can't even get over how crazy this is. And these people are just so thinking that this is such a great idea. And think about it. No benefits, no sick days, no holidays. Well, no, it's great for all the businesses. But guess what? It's not great for the 50% of America who is fully unemployed on top of the 28 or so percent that they now unofficially have as unemployed. I mean, that makes like 75% of America.
Johnson was in Utah.
I can sit here in the desert where I want to live, but I can still work in California.
Is there any sensitivity on your part about replacing people?
I don't think it's as much as replacing people. We want to definitely stay away from automation because somebody needs to be on a beam at all times.
What do you mean it's not automation? You're the personification of automation.
Ultimately, for us, we'd like to give more jobs to people that they wouldn't normally be able to have or do. Like, myself and Kimo.
But if you're in Utah and you are servicing lots of customers in maybe multiple stores, right?
Correct.
You are replacing the jobs of people who would be in the stores themselves. Isn't that just obvious?
A person still needs to operate the device. We're not robotic, so to speak.
Are they being defensive about not replacing jobs?
But you're talking to two people that have jobs. The one you're not interviewing is the person who didn't get a job working in this store here locally.
Oh, good point.
I was also not interviewing the heads of companies that provide robots at local hotels, robots that can thin out lettuce crops.
The reaction people have here seems to be similar to if you called up a tobacco company and said, I'd like to do a story on smoking and health.
So when you called up companies for this shoot to appear on the PBS NewsHour, they said, not if it's about displacing labor?
I found the doors would immediately slam shut. Oh, no, we make people more productive. Well, making people more productive puts other people out of work.
Now, in fairness, not everyone in the Valley was afraid to admit that robots are labor-saving devices.
Are you okay with the fact that this is going to replace thousands, maybe tens of thousands of caddies?
Absolutely. And this technology can be applied to other types of jobs as well. Porters, bellhops, stockroom clerks, anywhere where heavy lifting is involved.
Of course, new jobs are being created in Silicon Valley. That's why entrepreneur Vivek Wadhwa confidently told us this in 2012.
The convergence of these technologies will create jobs in areas we can't even think of.
But these days, Wadhwa is singing a different, dolorous tune.
Technology is moving faster than anyone believes, and it is going to disrupt industries and create unemployment on a scale that we haven't imagined before.
Why did you used to think it wasn't going to be a problem?
Because I believed what people in Silicon Valley do, that technology will make everything all right.
Yeah, there you go. That is the false promise that they have sold to everyone who's now standing there with open arms accepting this, thinking it's going to make everything okay. And they're trying to tell us that, yes, even though there aren't going to be jobs, don't worry about it because it will be used for higher level brain function. You'll be more artistic. Isn't that what we were hearing Kurzweil say yesterday? You can expand your brain and it'll all be okay. But wait a second. In the meantime, our entire economy is being dismantled and falling apart before our eyes. And we're not just talking about the United States economy. We're talking about the global economy. And I really think it's on purpose because guess what? This TPP and everything else doesn't matter when the robots are coming to take it all over. I will guarantee you that that is why Google, one of the main reasons why Google invested in 8 robotics companies last year. They see the writing on the wall. They're going to be like an employment agency, Google Robot Employment Agency.
Debates with the who's who of Silicon Valley. And I sit back and think these people live in their own world, that they don't know poverty. They don't know despair. They don't know what the impact of unemployment is.
People in the Silicon Valley believe that what we're doing is God's work. We are making the world a better place.
Around the corner from Stanford's robotics lab, the university's world-class art museum provided a last symbolic stop.
Here we are in paradise, but we're standing in front of Rodin's The Gates of Hell.
So in your dystopia, there are millions of Americans who literally are out of luck and are facing a grim future because they simply don't have the skills to sell in the new economy.
I think that's true. Here's the good news. The U.S. economy has doubled reliably about every 40 years for several hundred years now. So when you look out 40 years from now, we're gonna have twice as much wealth as we have today. The question is, who's going to get that wealth?
Yeah.
Is it going to be concentrated in the hands of an elite, or is it going to be distributed more widely?
Good question. This is economics correspondent Paul Solman reporting in as human a way as is still possible for the PBS NewsHour from Silicon Valley.
Yeah, don't leave me hanging.
Yeah, guess what? News reporters are next, too. I'm going to give that one some applause. That actually was a really good expose on PBS. And sometimes, I don't know, you got to watch PBS, but that was a good one. They really actually dealt with some of the issues. So, you know, to add insult to injury, I had mentioned this story yesterday. RoboForce, Chinese plant, replaces 90% of its workers with robots. I want to thank Hammy for this one. A Chinese company has begun building the first factory in Dongguan manufacturing hub in the south of the country, which will be staffed almost exclusively by robots in a countrywide automation drive. So China is also in a massive automation drive. Initially, about 1,000 robots will be used at the factory of the Shenzhen Yiwen Precision Technology Company, which produces components for mobile phones. Of course it does. Mobile phones, which of course are going to be fueled by the internet, the Google internet balloons, and the Facebook internet drones we learned about yesterday. Growing market, and it's probably, who knows, they're probably components for Apple phones. The quote, the use of industrial robots will help the company to reduce the number of frontline workers by at least what? Yes, 90%, says Chen Shui, the chairman of the company's board, China's Daily Reported. When all 1,000 industrial robots are put into operation in the coming months, we will only need to recruit fewer than 200 software technicians and management personnel. Shenhan Yiwen Precision Technology expects that the plant's production capacity would amount to around US$322 million annually. It does not, however, say how much it invested in the project. More and more factories in the Pearl River Delta, an urban and industrial hub in southern China, often dubbed the world's workshop. Oh, it's going to be the new Chinese North Pole. Started to introduce robots in a bid to replace human labor. Yes, and they're all going to be manned with robotic elves. But today, the region faces two problems, which force it to look for new development strategies, including mass automation. The first problem is a labor shortage caused by more people rejecting factory jobs. Damn those Chinese. That's why they got to send them all to Malaysia. And the Department of Human Resources and Social Security of the Guangdong province, where Pearl River Delta is situated, said the local industry lacks from 600 to 800,000 workers. The second problem is that Chinese labor is becoming less cheap. China has been the most attractive country for foreign companies because of its low-cost workforce, but now China is starting to lose its advantage. Yes, because China now has this burgeoning middle class as they sucked it from America, the big fat orange through a straw. A big part of it went and ended up in China. And I don't know if you guys saw any of those stories, but I've been reading them for the last few years. There's this huge middle class now in China that gets to go on vacations and have campers and whatever. I mean, it looks like the middle class we used to have. But lo and behold, now they're costing too much. Chinese corporations are having trouble competing. And so now we got problems. We're either going to automate or move shit down to the South Pacific. Since now China is starting to lose its advantage, numbers aggregated by Bloomberg suggest an average Chinese factory worker earns just under $500 per month, which I guess that's not a burgeoning middle class, but hey, there is a burgeoning middle class there, trust me. Maybe $500 a month is middle class in China, who knows. But while in Thailand, the number is under $350 a month, and lo and behold, Cambodia, they only make about 75. Guangdong's authorities and companies are counting on automation of the manufacturing process. Hey, didn't they ever hear of NAFTA? They should be paying attention to what happened in NAFTA. They sucked all the manufacturing out of the Northeast, took it down to the South and Mexico, eventually over to China. It was a free-for-all. That's exactly what's going to happen. The province plans to invest about $154 billion in the robotization of the manufacturing production, according to the South China Daily. Guangxu, the the capital of Guangdong, has set goal to automate 80% of its manufacturing production by 2020. And guys, 2020 is such a huge year. They are predicting so much in the way of automation in 2020. They also have this vaccinate all humans by 2020. We're going to find that. Or vaccinate all adults. I don't know. There was some story I pulled up this morning that I have in the queue to read. As 2020, the assimilation will be complete. The International Federation of Robotics, I didn't know we had one of those, regards China is the largest market for industrial robots, with 36,560 industrial robots sold to China just in 2013, which is about 20% of the worldwide number. By 2017, China can have more robots in industry than any other country in the world. But China's robot-to-worker ratio is still rather low, at about 30 robots per 10,000 employees. South Korea employs the most robots at 396 per 10,000 workers, followed by Japan with 332. And yes, I was going to mention Japan. I just saw a video a few weeks back where they now have an entire hotel staffed by robots and androids. And I don't know, it's in, I don't remember exactly where it was, but it was almost like it was a futuristic type city. So it reminded me of like a Disney Epcot or something like that, vision of the future. But don't think it's not coming. Japan has a very aging population, as does a lot of the planet. And they are going full tilt with the development of lifelike robotics to try to stave off the losing the youth of the future. I mean, they still got to run, so they're giving it all up. All right, let's see here. I have it right here. Let's connect. I don't know. I guess we're going to do this today. I was too tired this morning. I was woken up at about 10 minutes to the show with my cell phone dead next to me and no alarm, and it was kind of gray out, so it actually looked like it was like 6, and I found out it was like 10 minutes to 10 Eastern, so had to move. All right, Bill Gates predicts the future of employment. Here we go.
Well, hello, this is Val Campbell from the Sozo team. And I want to welcome you here. It's a beautiful, sunny day.
I don't know what this is. Wait. I was looking for the Bill Gates interview. Hold the phone. I thought it was a Bill Gates interview, but I don't know who that was. Sozo. All right, hold on. What? No. Well, he's been talking about it forever. We did do an interview, though, once. Oh, Bill Gates. Bill Gates also wants robots to take care of the elderly. And here's another one. Will robots take the jobs of doctors? It's exactly what I was telling you, that, what do we used to call it? We used to sell stuff for this, too. Damn it. For remote medicine. And, like, we were selling it first to small little cities that didn't have, you know, a doctor always on staff, let's say, so they could be doing, like, basics. But now it's everywhere. Well, I don't think we're going to be able to find this. Come on. He did a big interview. Did they, like, remove that from the truth algorithm? Robots and jobs. He did a big interview, and he said robots are going to take all your jobs. He literally did. Oh, damn it. Well, here, we can listen to this one, though. This one might be good. This is Robots, War, and Artificial Intelligence by Bill Gates. He's in the know.
A special edition of Q&A with Bill Gates. Our next question comes from Aryan Jahiri.
In an episode of The Simpsons, a character made the following quote about the future when addressing cadets. The wars of the future will not be fought on the battlefield or at sea. They will be fought in space or possibly on top of a very tall mountain. In either case, most of the actual fighting will be done by small robots. And as you go forth today, remember always your duty is clear, to build and maintain those robots. While such a quote is supposed to be satirical, do you think one day robots doing human tasks such as fighting wars will become reality?
Well, we already have the equivalent of robots doing a lot of things. You know, if you look at how farming was done historically and how it's done today, you know, those are mechanical devices that are helping us out a lot. If you look at what a telephone operator used to do or what a typist used to do, we are proceeding to replace all sorts of rote labor with robots. And this is a progression that with vision, with speech recognition, with greater mobility, will span to a lot of new areas.
Including warfare, which I think is the point that that young man just made. And indeed, we have drones already, these robots flying over different countries, assassinating people. The future, according to futurologists who look at robotics, could be of tiny swarms, insect-sized drones, able to infiltrate people's houses and kill them. And do you think about the future? Do you think about these kind of things, how it might look?
Ding, ding. Wow, I have a story about that queued up. Insect-sized drones that can infiltrate people's houses. Yes, yes, yes. It might not be an Atlas robot marching down your street in unison with the rest of the squadron. It might be mini mosquito drones, Mr. Bill Gates. Very interesting how this guy asked him that question.
Well, today we have real insects invading people's homes. It's called malaria.
And ah, ha, ha, yes, he got it.
It actually does kill people.
I don't give that asshole applause. By the way, they just came up with a malaria vaccine. Bravo, Mr. Gates, who invested in a vaccine company last year. I'm sure it was probably his company that had something to do with it, though I don't know, but we should look into that. I just saw recently that they believe, at the cusp of curing malaria.
So I have a strange obsession with the present. I don't see robots as something that will lead to more war. You know, we have to be careful to avoid war. In general, the trend has been quite phenomenal in that regard. Violence in general, particularly of that type, less genocide. You know, there's an unbelievable book about this by Steven Pinker that really talks about the trend and how positive it's been. But robots are a good thing. Let's just use them for something other than war.
Next question is related to that. It comes from Jessica Lee.
Do you ever think that artificial intelligence will ever surpass the human mind? And if so, how would humanity handle it?
Well, it'd be very humbling. you know, in certain respects, computers are far faster than we are today. You know, multiplying, perfect memory. And it's this wonderful auxiliary tool that lets us communicate and create the ability to simulate things. You know, try out a new car design and see how that's going to work, or a new nuclear reactor, look at how you would design drugs. Computer simulation is this mind-blowing advance that will increase the rate of innovation.
Yeah, designing drugs is good old IBM Watson. That's what they got. One of the projects they have him working on is doing that black box drug ID, going through all the known drugs and substances to see if it'll cure any other disease that it was never tested for.
And so, you know, I do think that when the computer takes over certain tasks, that'll be tough for us. It'll be a long time before you're matching the type of broad judgment that humans exercise in many different areas.
When you were younger, you predicted this could happen, that carbon-based life forms might not be unique.
Over time, the machines are going to get very smart. And you know, like all modern things, we'll have to adjust to that. It's kind of an embarrassment of riches problem as opposed to the opposite that many people worry about in the future. And so I do believe it's a solvable problem. You know, now we have to avoid climate change and other problems before.
Right, and get carbon down to zero. That's how we're going to avoid it. Let's get carbon down to zero per Bill Gates at his TED Talk. And let's make sure that we encourage the development of robots to take care of the elderly and the elite. And it'll all be better. Don't worry.
We'll even have this one to worry about.
Sure, but do you think artificial intelligence is doable?
Absolutely.
And how long do you think that could take?
Very hard to predict. At least 5 times as long as Ray Kurzweil says.
So he says, you know, anyone who's ever seen a slum in India, and I have to say I've never seen one up close and personal, but I most certainly, anyone who saw Slumdog Millionaire or any type of movie that took place in India in that first clip that we were listening to, the one guy, he obviously was Indian. He looked like he'd been here for quite a number of years working as a software programmer or robotics designer. But he even said, he's like, no one in this country has seen poverty. And if they really understood poverty, they wouldn't be going for this. Because poverty, I had a friend in college. She was actually a grad student here from India. She was a roommate of a friend of mine for the last 2 or 3 years that I was in college. And we hung out a lot and talked a lot about the way things are in India. And here's an interesting thing. A lot of people in India, at least the people who are in the upper to middle upper class, and they do have caste systems that you really can't move within. So if you're poor, you're always poor. But her dad was a diplomat or something, so they had money and she came here to school. But one of the things that you'll find out is that a large majority of the people with money in India are highly educated. But guess what? There's no jobs. So they come to other countries, they get their degrees, they become doctors, programmers, engineers. They can't go home to India because there's no jobs there. It's a country with mass starvation and poverty. And now, how many was it? 1.2 billion people on IBM's Universal ID biometrics program, cashless society. A nice big test bed. Bill Gates over there stabbing people with needles for vaccine testing. That's what India is good for. Programmer neighborhoods that he built, training the Indians to be customer service reps and program for cheap on the contract. That's what they've used India for. Well, guess what, India? It's just as much of a joke on you as it is on us. That's our future. That is the dystopic future that we are facing here. They're looking at making us another third world country. And oh, but what? India has nukes. Yes, India has nukes. All right, I found the story. I couldn't find the video, but I did find the story. Bill Gates, people don't realize how many jobs will soon be replaced by software bots. And he's got some evil looking grin with a joystick in his hand. This is back from 2014, March 13th. Big changes are coming to the labor market that people and governments aren't prepared for, Gates believes. Speaking in Washington, D.C., economic think tank, the American Enterprise Institute, Gates said that within 20 years, a lot of jobs will go away, replaced by software automation. This is what he said. Software substitution, whether it is for drivers or waitresses or nurses, it's progressing. Technology over time will reduce the demand for jobs, particularly at the lower end of the skill set. 20 years from now, labor demand for lots of skill sets will be substantially lower. And I don't think people have that in their mental model. He's not only predicting this gloomy scenario for workers. In January, The Economist ran a big profile naming over a dozen jobs to be taken over by robots in the next 20 years, including telemarketers. Oh, yeah, accountants. There was the other one. Retail workers. And I think we saw that one. Lawyers. It went on and on. And news reporters, too. Gates believes the tax codes are going to need to change to encourage companies to hire employees, including perhaps eliminating income and payroll taxes altogether. Oh, isn't that going to be beneficial? Tell you what, we'll get rid of all your income taxes, Mr. Corporation, like we do for GE with all the loopholes, as long as you hire humans and not robots. And of course, you have to only hire the elite few that went to these few elite colleges that know somebody. He's also not a fan of raising the middle wage, fearing that it will discourage employers from hiring workers in the very categories of jobs that are most threatened by automation, and that is kind of true. He explains, quote, "When people say we should raise the minimum wage, I worry about what that does to job creation, potentially dampening the demand in the part of the labor spectrum that I am most worried about." And, I mean, that is true. If you had your choice of raising the middle wage or buying a couple of robots that can do the jobs forever and ever, 24/7, every holiday and weekend, and then just have one manager that you pay a paltry salary, why would you not? Probability that robots will take your jobs in the next 20 years, 1 equals certain. So 0.99, telemarketers, gone. 0.94, accountants and auditors, gone. 0.92, retail salespeople, gone. 0.89, technical writers, ding, gone. Now that's one of those knowledge workers. That's someone that has to actually use their head to put some crafting into it. I guess they don't care about good grammar, quips, and technical writing. Gone. Actually, they don't. It's very, very cut and dry. Real estate agents, 0.86, gone. 0.81, word processors and typists, gone. Machinists, 0.65, gone. And remember, 3D printing, that is another quote-unquote robotics-type technology. 3D printing is revolutionizing machinist jobs and building components. And you could do it with just a simple blueprint that you can download from the internet somewhere and upload to your printer and then print 10 bazillion of them. 0.55% commercial pilots, gone. Now remember, we looked at unmanned aerial vehicles. They already are doing it with some of the military jets. I think it was the F-35 they were experimenting with. We already have some high-end drones. Raptor drones are about the size of small planes. How far is it going to take? And I know after all those plane crashes, bang, bang, bang. Remember, there were three or four of them in a row. Oh, God. They might have been jihadi pilots. Well, now we need to get around that and automate these aircraft. What's next? 0.43% economists. Oh, see you later, economists. And yes, we read a story about AI being able to trade stocks and stuff much better than humans do because, what, they're not irrational. 0.4% health technologists. Well, let's usher in the age of IBM Watson taking over VA healthcare. 0.37% actors. Well, with any type of, like, what's it called? CGI. I mean, they've been doing that for years. But animation and 3D imaging is just so far down the line now. And you literally could, like, put someone's face on an animated body and make it look highly realistic. So I could see that as possible. Firefighters, 0.17%. There already was a robot from the Navy, and I'm trying to remember his name. I had it on the tip of my tongue. He was a firefighting robot for the Navy already, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. Editors, well, thank God the editor isn't going to go away right away. 0.06%, they're going to get rid of his job. Chemical engineers, phew, 0.02%. Though I just read something yesterday where they now have hijacked the cell engines to do some sort of chemical research on stuff, so I don't know about that. Clergy, well, thank goodness, because 0.008%, we're not going to have robot priests as we're crying the blues about tomorrow. Maybe we won't have clergy's jobs get taken because there will be no need for them anymore. I don't see how an athletic trainer wouldn't be replaceable, because that could very easily be done. And dentists, I've already seen them in Japan with their dental robots, not necessarily doing the robotic dentistry on you, but robots being used as patients as opposed to cadavers like they do in dental school. So there you go. I don't know. There's quite a number of jobs, and they didn't even mention like fast food clerks or anything like that. Janitors. I'm sure that there's a lot of, you know, factory workers. Those were just a few basic jobs. All right. But to add insult to all this injury, yes, DARPA, and we heard Bill Gates get a question asking about robots in warfare. DARPA wants drones to hunt like a hawk. Back when the story came out at the end of 2014, we looked at this, but I think we're going to look at it anyway. Again, just to kind of nail this home, because this research has been going on for quite a long time for these animal-esque search and destroy robots, and ones that are small, the size of hummingbirds, the size of bees, the size of roaches, well, or actual robo-roaches, robo-moths. But now they're going to have the bird ones. Remember, we saw those. They'll sit outside drawing power from a power line for days on end doing surveillance until you leave, and then they follow you, and you don't even know they're out there. A new project aims to build drones intelligent enough to fly through indoor labyrinths and scout for danger, all without remote control. The U.S. military is looking for a scout that is quick, maneuverable, and smart as a hawk, zipping through thick woods to find prey, but looks instead for enemy troops or threats to U.S. ground troops or insurgents in the woods. The scout has to be a drone, though. Birds won't do. Neither will slow, remote-controlled, unmanned aerial vehicles that are noisy, slow, or have to be flown by a pilot who pays attention to the video screen in the remote and the controls by both the flyer and its camera. This scout should be autonomous enough that a military foot patrol or team of emergency responders can turn on the power, point the drone in the right direction, and let it go. The drone has to be able to figure out how to search an area, how to carry cameras, microphones, and other sensors, and be able to navigate indoors with no assistance in a, quote, labyrinth of rooms, stairways, and corridors, unquote, according to an announcement late yesterday, and this was from December of 2014, from the DARPA, and they had put out an RFP, is what happened. In its announcement of the Fast Lightweight Autonomy Program, FLA for short, DARPA asked for ideas or proposals on how to write the algorithms that would allow a small UAV to fly up to what? Yes, 45 miles per hour while navigating unfamiliar indoor spaces without the help of a GPS or guidance from operators outside. Now, when I first read about this program, too, they were selling it to be able to use it over in places like Iraq, where they were doing urban warfare, fighting insurgents in the cities. But don't think this isn't going to be at some point used to sniff out you or me up in a cabin somewhere in the middle of nowhere trying to be a Luddite to get away from the killer robots. Because I'm telling you, why else would they need this? And I mean, there was a video too with this that I had searched for 2 years that I'd seen way back when. And it was a DARPA or a Department of Defense video that had shown the concept of these very creatures, these fast, lightweight, autonomous creatures that would sneak in the door of a target and then patrol down the hall and then find the guy sitting at the window who is the targeted insurgent and then either shoot him or inject him with something in the neck as he falls to the floor. I mean, this is pretty insane stuff, and this is what they are doing. I mean, don't think that robo bees, you go out to a Harvard's robo bee site and you look, and they're like, oh yeah, it's to pollinate plants and to help farmers and to do this and do that. And yeah, bullet point number six, surveillance. They'll have swarms of small robotic bees doing surveillance, and don't think at some point in the future they're not going to be able to sting with some sort of poisonous dart. Mosquitoes. I mean, what did we look at for the history of biowarfare for the United States? And we found that what did they use as a big part of their biological warfare research? Oh, yes, insects as disease vectors. And what have we found in all these robotics that they've been working on? They've discovered a long time ago when they were first trying to create a bipedal robot. Don't recreate the machine. Nature has had millions of years to perfect the mechanical systems of the body for the perfect type of locomotion, let's say. So what they started to figure out with these robotics is they just mimic nature because it's perfect. And so that's what they're doing. And scarier than mimicking nature, though, is that they're trying to make them as small as insects, let's say, you know, and not only with making little robo bees, but what about genetically modified mosquitoes? We looked at some of that with that gene CRISPR engine, I think it was. No, it was called a gene engine. No, there was a name for it. I don't know. We'll have to look it up. We talked about that, though. They can use these genetically modified mosquitoes. There were two ways that they were going to completely wipe out a species. And one was to use the special gene engine that could physically remove down a chain of offspring, let's say certain proteins, or make you dependent on something down an offspring like tetracycline. I think that was how they were controlling them. So once that's removed from your environment, they just all die. I don't know. We are in some very scary, mad science gone off the rails mad now. All right, back to the story. So DARPA is looking for proposals on how to write the algorithms that would allow small UAVs to fly up to 45 miles an hour while navigating unfamiliar indoor spaces without the help of GPS or guidance from operators outside. Its goal is to evolve drones beyond their current status as awkwardly fault-prone remote-controlled gadgets whose intelligence is focused almost entirely on making them easier to maneuver using remote controls. These FLA drones are supposed to be quick, independent robots who can create and follow their own search patterns, react correctly to things that they find, and report back to operators who may have had nothing but to do but watch the video feed as the FLA bot searches. That sounds as if DARPA is looking for more than simply real-time sensor data processing, building a bot that can read a situation, navigate through it, and respond to particular stimuli, identifying flood survivors, oh yes, clinging to debris, for example, signaling for help, yes, it's always about protecting you. Requires something very close to a low order of artificial intelligence, comparable to the birds or bugs that DARPA uses as examples of what it wants, but without the self-awareness and self-determination obvious even in birds. This is great. This program focuses on autonomy, not on flight platform, where autonomy includes sensing, perception, planning, and control. All the systems developed to satisfy the autonomy and mobility requirements will be tested in the same DARPA-selected UAV to keep developers focused on the ability to fly rather than the mechanism to allow it. I would really love to see how this plan is moving along since this already was back in December. I'm going to have to do a little bit of research in the Fast Lightweight Autonomy Program. And guess what? This DARPA.mil / news events / releases / 12, 20, 2014 / 12/22 that they link to for the press release from DARPA's website gives me now access denied. You do not have permission to access this page on the server, and then it gives me a reference number. How lovely is that? So guess what? I guess we will never know now, will we? All right, and last but not least, if I can find it here, don't worry about it, because as those micro-flying vehicles are zipping through the woods and through your hallways at 45 miles an hour at 3 a.m. in the dark, they probably will also be equipped with the latest facial recognition technology that, what? Oh, it works in the dark. Yes. Don't you worry. Those 230 points now can also be seen in infrared. It says the subtitle to this story is "Now There's Nowhere to Hide." And diabolical laughter ensues. From July 30th, 2015, in Science Alert, it is getting harder and harder to get away from the cameras these days, and now a new type of facial recognition system goes further than most. It uses infrared scanning technology to match the thermal heat signature of a person's with a standard photograph of it. In other words, you can now be seen in the dark. And what makes this invention so interesting is that there is very little correlation between how you appear in the daylight and how you appear in an infrared camera. Researchers in Germany overcame by teaching a deep neural network to do all the heavy lifting. These sophisticated computer programs are designed to mimic the human brain, making connections between data sets that set up a lot of processing power. The system was fed many samples of images of certain people and pulling different facial expressions, different times of the day. And with enough pictures, the neural network could accurately spot a face 80% of the time in just 35 milliseconds. Holy shit. All right, guys, guess what? We're in the last 10 seconds of the show. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next. And we have All Live Radio. We have Ron on Game On live at 7 p.m. JJ live at 8 p.m. Primetime with Michael and Nick at 9 live. Geoengineering Watch with Dana and Russ. I'll be running at 10. I don't think they're live. And 11 o'clock, Anthony Media. That's my kid's bed. All right, everyone, have a nice Tuesday. I'll be